sometimes a lot of people would go like, oh, well, I buy my stuff from a local small farmer. So that's great. I mean, you're supporting your local ecosystem, you know, keeping the money in that ecosystem. That's great and everything. But once again, you have to remember that just because they're self-employed and a small farmer doesn't mean they're actually good at what they do.
Right. Gene, thanks for coming on the show.
No, thank you for having me, Colin. It's great to finally meet you. I've seen your supplement brand around for a while, and I'm like, okay.
It means a lot to me. When I hear that, you know, I really appreciate that. And it's, yeah, this internet's an amazing thing. I feel like half the time we don't realize people are watching or listening because maybe they don't tell us, right? We don't get that feedback, but they are. And that's why doing stuff like this and putting this message out there, like even if it really affects 1 in 10 people, I mean, that can spiral, you know, pay it forward forever, right? So tell me a little bit about what you're doing and maybe just like a quick synopsis of the background, because really I just want to dive into the crux of what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. So like a quick introduction. I mean, I was born on a biodynamic farm in Ukraine.
Oh, wow.
You know, for your listeners that don't know what that is, biodynamic farming is what they actually have probably a mental image of when they think of farming, you know, like huge open landscape, a lot of different animals,
yeah,
small family living there and sustaining itself, et cetera, et cetera. And basically I moved to the US and I thought like everyone was farming that way, including like all the stuff, all the food they sold at Costco or like at Walmart. I'm like, oh, everyone farms biodynamically. This is amazing that the US could produce like so much food organically. I didn't even know like what synthetic biocides were or antibiotics or steroid beta agonists, whatever. The laundry list is very long in terms of the chemical inputs in it. Agricultural industry. So once again, thinking like all the food is produced biodynamically, very organically, then maybe like probably at this point, like 4 years ago, or maybe 4.5 years ago, I ran into a presentation Paul Check was giving, and he's kind of like a world-renowned holistic health expert.
Yeah. Paul Check's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I ran into one of his YouTube videos called Nutrition, the Dirt Facts. And then he quickly outlined like the stark contrast between, you know, industrial agriculture versus like what he was promoting. What he was promoting was biodynamic farming, very similar to what we did in Ukraine. And at that point, that's when I kind of like, quote unquote, woke up from the matrix. And I'm like, oh man, these 50 eggs I was buying at Costco for like $1.50, you're telling me they're not organically grown or the hens aren't outside and on pasture 24/7. So I kind of woke up from, quote unquote, like the matrix at that point. And that's actually when all the confusion began. So the topic of this podcast, what we can cover is basically like, even for people that are health conscious in the States that do want to improve their health a tremendous amount, it's gotten like extremely confusing. And I would say like almost impossible to actually source high quality food in the States, even when your intention is to do that. So like, for example, let's just say a person wants to transform their health. They go to a dietitian and the dietitian tells them something as innocent as, you know, make sure you include more free range organic chicken in your diet, among like a myriad of other variables that the dietitian would probably suggest as well. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so let's kind of take that information and let's see what like the average person in America would do with that information in terms of applying it. So the average person, like basically 99.8% of people would go to their local supermarket. Whole Foods probably being the best example of the supermarket, and then Costco, all those other places, Walmart as well. And they would go in there and it's easy to find free range organic chicken. And it sounds great, you know, it's free range. So in the customer's mental image, they have like just chickens running around 24/7 outside. Mm-hmm. It says organic, so that means it's exactly how nature intended it to grow, basically how the hen would grow without people even being around, et cetera, et cetera. And they would purchase that chicken without even questioning it at all.
Yep.
And basically, let's kind of dive into, and this happens with every single food group. We can touch on a myriad of different food groups. I'm just using poultry as an example because it's a very popular protein to buy in the States, far more popular than beef. And the person who buy this pretty much their whole entire life thinking it's kind of giving them, optimizing their health, you know, decreasing inflammation, et cetera, et cetera. So let's kind of dive in into what free range and organic even means these days in terms of poultry. So first and foremost, like when you see free range, like industry free range basically indicates that there is about like 1.5 to 2 square foot of space per head. So typically what you'll see in a free range operation is the huge warehouse type building, and they have like a small little concrete patio with a very small access door to that outside where the hens get to basically roam free outside. Given weather restrictions, et cetera, yep. Oftentimes, honestly, like if you go to any of these operations, and this is industry norm, what you'll see is basically out of the 30,000 hens indoors, like maybe like 50 of them would be outside in the small little concrete patio. So basically what happens when you have that type of operation, when you're not taking the hens to the food, such as in a rotational grazing type of operation, if they're left outside, for example, you have to bring the food to the hens. So basically what are they feeding these hens? They're feeding them like a tremendous amount of grain. And the thing is, on the labels, these companies aren't lying to you. They're actually telling the truth. They do say, like in basically a small font at the bottom, they do say vegetarian.
Plant-based, right? They eat a plant-based diet.
Yeah, they do say vegetarian fed. Uh-huh. Very common. Yeah. Uh-huh. And obviously the average consumer in the U.S., because of Netflix documentaries and other forms of propaganda, they think like vegetarians are the apex of health. I have nothing against vegetarians. I'm pretty sure you'll find a handful of very healthy vegetarians, but they're using it kind of like in a very deceptive manner under this situation.
Yep.
They think like, oh, okay, these hens are vegetarians. That means they must be healthy because I saw this Netflix documentary and everyone on there was definitely healthy. Mm-hmm. So what vegetarian fed in terms of poultry production really means is they're grain fed.
Yep.
And the problem with that, the next question is the problem with that, it would be like, oh, Eugene, why does it matter if just the hens are grain fed? What does it matter? Especially since it's organic grains. Well, it matters a lot because hens or poultry in general, they're not vegetarians. They're omnivores.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to eat like bugs, insects, random stuff off the ground. You could supplement with grains, of course, but their diet shouldn't be predominantly just all grains. Mm-hmm. And when you do see vegetarian fed, it basically also indirectly tells you that it's a confined operation. It's a factory farm type of scenario. Because if they were truly allowed outside to roam free, what would they be doing? They'll be eating bugs, they'll be eating insects, et cetera, and they wouldn't be able to be classified as vegetarian fed. So you can see they're actually telling the consumer the truth.
Yeah, yeah, in a sneaky way. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're doing it in a very sneaky way as well. And then since it's this category, we're talking about, you know, organic free-range chicken, which is the best you're going to find at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Like half of the grains that the U.S. gets actually comes from overseas, come from very, very corrupt places like Ukraine, Turkey. Okay. And the corruption doesn't actually happen at the farmer level. Let's say in Turkey, the farmer uses a lot of biocides, glyphosate being very popular to use on grains, for example. And at the broker level, they just basically, before they ship it in, switch up the paperwork a little bit, and then basically ship it in as organic grain.
When it's not organic, right?
Yeah, it's not organic. And this is a very common problem. I talked to Joel Salatin a lot about this problem as well. There isn't quite a solution for it yet. And that's basically 50% of the grains. The Washington Post did a really good article on this issue. So now you have problems with the poultry not being fed a species-specific diet. So this offsets the basically natural omega-3 to omega-6 ratio. Mm-hmm. You know? So it basically shoots the omega-6 way up through the roof in relation to omega-3. So if a person is already highly inflamed, once again, this is just another food group that's adding inflammation to their body. Mm-hmm. And once again, they're going to the grocery store with the intention of actually improving their health. And that's what products are marketed as. And then you add also now possibly even with organic products, it might not be organic grains that are fed to the poultry. So now you're getting synthetic biocides, residue of synthetic biocides in the meat fibers, the organ fibers of the poultry as well. So that obviously, you know, the average American newborn born in an urban environment is already born with trace amounts of 200 different pesticides or 200 different chemicals rather in their bloodstream, you know, that's constantly in there brewing. And who knows what, there are no studies that obviously test the safety of 200 different.
Yep. We have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So you have that compounding effect. And then also when you crowd animals, a not well-known subject, and I actually didn't even know about this subject. I was introduced to it by Terry Cotran, the author of The Wildatarian Diet, great book as well. And that's basically when you jam-pack any kind of animal into a confined situation, what happens is there are three variables that lead to chronic inflammation in that animal. So one, obviously, the overcrowding scenario, it causes a lot of stress. They're shoulder to shoulder, there's no privacy, no room, et cetera, that causes a tremendous amount of stress. Two, there's obviously, when you have a confined situation, there's a lot of fecal matter and bacteria everywhere. So the immune system is constantly on overdrive trying to fight off all this bacteria. That causes a lot of inflammation. And then also actually a lot of the vaccines given to the animals cause a lot of inflammation as well. So you have these three variables producing chronic inflammation in the animal. And when the animal is chronically inflamed, basically the liver produces too much serum amyloid A proteins. And in small amounts, it's actually totally fine because basically it's a soluble protein. It breaks up in the body and actually serves a function in the body. But what happens when it's chronically produced, basically pieces of those serum amyloid A proteins are then broken off into amyloid A proteins. So AA amyloids, what they're referred to. And these are insoluble proteins that basically form as plaque around organ tissue, and as well as to a smaller extent, the muscle tissue of the animal. And it could be like a specific organ, or it could be systemic as well. And through various mice feeding studies, they did show that when mice fed meat or products tainted with AA amyloids, they also developed AA amyloids around their organs and muscle tissue.
You are what you eat. I think it's a pretty safe, heuristic. You are what you eat. So it's okay. So chicken, one example, it's very industrialized. I mean, you have pork, you have beef. Let's just assume that we know there's a scale of quality, right? Like obviously the bigger you go, this kind of always been the heuristic I kind of recommend people, like the bigger the company, the more mass produced, it's very, very unlikely anything is doing you any favors because I mean, like profit margin and scale and speed, like these are just not conducive to healthy food for healthy humans, right? That's kind of like the heuristic I use. So if we're thinking about like mass produced cheap Walmart eggs to like, then we go to even Costco organic eggs, which they do the things you talked about where they try to make it seem better than it is. Then we're going to go to like, I guess here in HEB in Texas, we have like kind of local free range eggs, but it's kind of big for Texas. So I wonder what they're doing. And then I can go down to like find these eggs that are from small farms around here where the chickens are probably just running around. Right. Yeah. So like how do we think about the primary meat products? Let's just focus on meat for now, because that's like a big part of in my audience's diet, my diet as well. And you know, like eating unhealthy animals is going to really disrupt your biology. Right. So if like beef, chicken, pork, maybe we could do seafood. I don't know as much about seafood. I don't know if that's as much of a corrupt thing or not, but I just go with wild caught. So that's the best I can do. How can people start like simply thinking about this so that if they are in the store and they can just like make kind of easy decisions based on like, is it bigger, more mass produced, avoid it, right? And like maybe safe middle area where they want to make some compromises, and then the best, like how do we think about how to make these better decisions and what to look for?
Yeah. So I guess in short, you know, like with poultry, you have no label. Yeah. Cage free. So completely useless. Cage free. You definitely want to stay away from that. Free range. In my opinion, you want to stay away from that as well. And then you have pasture raised. So you see that not so much in poultry meat products in the grocery store, but you see it more in egg products. So obviously pasture raised, there are various levels of integrity of pasture raised operations. So sometimes a lot of people would go like, oh, well, I buy my stuff from a local small farmer. So that's great. I mean, you're supporting your local ecosystem, you know, keeping the money in that ecosystem. That's great and everything. But once again, you have to remember that just because they're self-employed and a small farmer doesn't mean they're actually good at what they do.
Right.
Like, for instance, you can go to a small farmer nearby and let's just say they have, you know, a quarter of an acre of land and they have, since we're talking about poultry, like a bunch of poultry there. So a quarter of an acre of land, let's say you have like 300 chickens on there. They're going to eat up everything on that ground in like a few days, if not a day. Okay. So hens wake up and they basically, they're like, as Joel Salatin would say, like the perfect worker. They get up, they eat all day, and then they go to sleep exactly at 6 p.m. And then they wake up and do the same exact thing. So they're constantly scavenging, constantly foraging. So if you're not constantly rotating them onto fresh pasture almost daily, they just end up depleting the resources in that land. And then what happens? The farmer has to bring inputs in to feed the poultry, grains. So once again, you run into an operation that's heavily dependent on grains. It once again shoots the omega-6 way up in relation to omega-3. Oftentimes, what I found with small farmers is a lot of them would say they use non-GMO grains, but they don't necessarily use organic grains.
Mm.
So that's a problem as well, because now, once again, you're getting the
trace right, all the
right. biocides that make yep. it into them. And some people would counter that and they say, well, you know, these quantities are so small. They're so small, Eugene. Like, what does it matter if I get like one part per million of like glyphosate or atrazine or whatever, et cetera, et cetera? What does that matter? And there's a really good book on this called The Myths of Safe Pesticides by Andre Liu. And he's kind of like the guru in this area. And he's been investigating chemical agriculture for like, I don't know, 20 or 30 years at this point. And there are basically like three myths that make it acceptable for people to consume products that they know have trace amounts of various pesticides. And we could talk about in terms of crop production in this area, because it all ties back to making it into the grain that then again, those hens eat, and it makes it into the nutritional profile of the meat and organ content of those hens. So first and foremost, like people just presume right off the bat that these pesticides used on food are tested for safety. So contrary to popular belief, like a complete formulation of a chemical compound in the US is never required to be tested for safety before being used on actual crop production that people end up eating. So what ends up happening is basically this, like in any ingredient, you know this, and I'm talking more over to your audience here, but in any ingredient, basically you have active ingredients and then inactive inert ingredients.
Okay.
So the active ingredient is like the main guy, they do most of the work, but then the inert or inactive ingredient are basically supporting ingredients that increase the potency and lethality and also the duration of that main ingredient. Mm. So what's required to pass safety testing in the US for pesticides that are used in agriculture is basically they test the active ingredient in isolation on its own. That's it. They never test the complete formulation like ever. Hmm. It's just the active ingredient on its own in isolation. And then you have to remember in any crop production cycle, you have a myriad of different chemicals that are being used. Not just that one active ingredient in isolation on its own. You have a myriad of different complete formulations that yeah. are used on the same crop in any one given season. So that's already troubling. And then once again, like I mentioned in the beginning, the average newborn in America is already born with trace amounts of 200 different chemicals in their body. And there's no safety testing done on what these myriad of chemicals do to your body, to your central nervous system, to your physical body, whatever, all brewing in there all at the same time as this mm-hmm. cocktail. And the other one is basically like with especially like vegetables, a lot of people are like, well, I could just like wash it off. Like, who cares if I buy non-organic apples or whatever, other fruit or vegetables? And the truth of the matter is actually most pesticides used in agriculture are systemic pesticides. So they're meant to be actually soaked up by the root of the plant and actually become embedded as part of the nutritional profile yeah. of the actual crop. And actually, that's where the bulk majority of the pesticides sit, not on the surface. So oftentimes people would wash it off and they maybe wash off like 10% of the total content of the pesticide residue that's found in that specific crop. So that's another big myth that lets people continue that purchasing practice. And then the other one is like, oh, you know, it's like, I can't even like visually see these pesticides on the crop. I used to give grocery store tours often teaching people about food production practices, and I would get that one quite often. And what people have to understand is a lot of these chemicals, even in one part per trillion, which is basically one drop in three size swimming pools, has an impact on your physiology. Mm. And you're not, once again, getting just that one chemical. You're getting like exposed to a cocktail of chemicals from your environment and food right. all day, every day, all the time. Three meals a day, at least, the average person, I would say, would eat, you know? And that all, going back to the poultry subject, that all makes it back to the nutritional profile of the meat you're eating. And then obviously, you know, there's the whole monocropping issue. When you're growing a single crop on acre after acre after acre of land, it right. obviously depletes. I've got the author that gave this idea. It's not mine. Oh, Teaming with Microbes. I forgot the name of the book. I just want to make sure I give credit where it's due. When you look at an apple, for example, and you shave off 70% of the surface of the apple, that's pretty much like ocean. And then when you shave off like another 15% of the surface of Neapel, that's land that cannot be farmed for crops. It's just, there's nothing that could grow there. Mm-hmm. And then the remaining is basically, let's just say 10% or so, is where metropolitan areas are built. So they're built often on the most fertile ground. Okay. So then basically you're left over with give or take like 5 to 8% of the Earth's mass that's able to be farmed for crops. And then what's destroying the environment these days? Basically like automobiles and then industrial agriculture. Those are the two big culprits. And when you grow like a single crop on acre after acre after acre after acre, which doesn't happen anywhere in nature, it basically depletes that soil of the specific nutrients required for that specific crop because there's no rotation of crops. So usually what happens is the sun hits the plant, then the plant converts it into sugars that are fed to a specific ratio of bacteria and fungi that then attract a specific ratio of microorganisms, protozoa, nematodes, earthworms, et cetera, that all act to feed the plant, basically. Mm-hmm. So when the earthworms leave their casing or when the protozoa die, it all gets soaked up basically by the fungi, which has a symbiotic relationship with the root of the plant, which then make it into the nutritional profile of the plant. When you're just growing one plant year after year after year in that same exact plot of land, it depletes that land of specific nutrients that that specific plant needs. So right. What happens then? The plants become weak. What does nature do to get rid of weak plants? Nature sends in pests. Pests are nature's way of getting weak plants. If you don't have weak plants, if you don't have poor farming systems, pests won't come around. Pests only come around for weak and dying plants. Mm-hmm. So what happens when the pests come around? You have to use pesticides.
Yep.
If you're not going to change your farming practice, obviously. Rather, if you're not going to change the belief system that led to all those problems to begin with, your only solution is symptom management. So what's symptom management in industrial agriculture? Just chemicals. So yep. They're going to spray a lot of pesticides or whatever other biocides on the ground, which are going to destroy the microorganisms even more, which are going to make that cycle even worse the next season around. So then they have to bring more chemicals in. And eventually you just kill the soil. Now you just have dirt. All of a sudden you can't grow anything there. So remember, you only have like 5% of the land that's able to be farmed for crops. So that's extremely troubling. But how it relates to the poultry subject is now you're taking these crops that are deficient in various nutrients, feeding them, grains that are deficient in various nutrients rather, feeding them to the poultry. Those poultry aren't getting those nutrients either. They just can't come up with nutrients out of nothing. They have to get it from something. And if their source of food is also devoid of various nutrients, you're not going to be able to find that in poultry. And in fact, Joel Salatin did an experiment, I think in 2013, if I'm not mistaken, where he basically tested. Joel Salatin is kind of like more of a biodynamic farmer for your listeners.
He's been on the show. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So basically he had his eggs compared to industrially grown
eggs. Yeah. I remember him talking about this. Yeah.
Yeah. And I forgot the exact numbers, but basically in every single micronutrient, it could have been like hundreds of percentage points greater in terms of the pasture raising. So a lot of people think like, oh, I'm just getting like 2 or 3% more vitamin A. I think in his case, it was like 700% more vitamin A per egg than versus like a caged operation, like an industrial operation, basically.
Right.
So as you can see, like this person had the intention of actually becoming healthy. You know what I mean? Listening to the dietitian, she said, go buy free range organic chicken. He went and then maybe he found out through a show like this, free range organic chicken isn't the way to go. Then he went to a small farmer, but you can see it gets really tricky at the small farmer level as well.
Okay. So what would people do? I mean, obviously like every single one of these things, pork, beef, chicken, and then you get into plants, like they all have problems. And again, like that heuristic of the bigger it is, the more mass produce, you shouldn't be eating it for the most part. And then you have stuff that's in the middle that what you're saying is probably duping a lot of people because they think it's good and they're buying it and they think, oh, it's fine. And, but we want to kind of move people maybe to the real way of sourcing, which you said you had recommendations for that. So let's focus on giving me what those recommendations are. And like, obviously we can do chicken and beef maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have like by category, but maybe also just some general ways to think about all the food. Like, are there some like farmer specific ways or like getting to know your farmer and like asking how they're doing it? And that's what you stick to. What's like just an overall sourcing methodology to solve a lot of these problems?
Yeah, so great resource for like basically pork and lamb, goats, and beef.
Okay.
Amazing resources, American Grass-Fed Association, I think .org or .com. forgot exactly what they registered as, but if you go to the bottom of their website, they have an interactive map of the US.
I've seen that. So are you saying that every farm that's on their website is like half, it has to pass some certain muster? Like how do, what are they gauging to do that? And I assume these are mostly small farmers too.
Yeah, they're basically all small farmers. So in terms of like grass-fed labeling, there is no basically oversight on that label. So anyone can claim grass-fed.
They just claim whatever.
Mm-hmm. It's extremely hard to actually find legitimate grass-fed beef in the US. So in relation to that, American Grass-Fed Association is one of few third-party certification bodies that actually goes out there and inspects the site before certifying them, that they actually are legitimately abiding by their practices that they're advertising themselves as. So, I mean, could it be better? They do once a year inspections plus like a random stop in inspection, basically.
That's good.
Okay. I mean, could it be better? Of course, it could be better, but the other alternative is no inspection.
Compared to what's going on.
Go to the supermarket. I mean, all the beef is basically like bright red with very white, fat, thick pieces of fat on it. You know, that's not grass-fed beef. Although they advertise as grass-fed beef. First of all, the fat would never be like hard like wax, you know, and then it's not going to be like that abundant where it's like this much fat and like a little bit more meat. And then on top of that, it's like, it's not going to be like bright red. It's going to be more like burgundy red or like maybe even almost like borderline purple, you know, if it's like grass-fed beef. So if you don't have the time, that's a great resource because at least there's some kind of oversight going
on. And you can find some local farms is what you're saying that probably also produce maybe pork, chicken, other things too.
Yeah, they don't even need to be local. Like,
yeah, so nowadays you can just buy online, true.
Yeah, so like I don't even have a car. I get all my food delivered to my door through small family farms in the Texas area, for example. I don't even have a car. I haven't gone to the grocery store in like probably a year and a half. Basically, how it works is like AZ Grass-Raised Beef is a great company that has a good establishment and good logistics. I haven't had any issues with them. Great customer service as well. You order before Tuesday, they ship it out on Tuesday, you get it on Thursday, right to your doorstep for $10. And you can order a large quantity of meat too for like 3 or 4 weeks to really economize that $10 shipping. Some people have an issue with frozen meat, but they have to understand that it's usually flash frozen shortly after it's been slaughtered. So actually the nutritional-
Yeah, the better places do that, right.
Yeah, the nutritional profile is actually preserved a lot better.
Yeah.
Another great website is eatwild.com. That's an amazing resource. You can go to the top left corner and it has like, I think eggs, dairy, poultry, once again, all small farms and most all of them do shipping. So don't worry if they're not like 10 feet away from you. You don't have to drive people. They do ship directly to you. Having said that, you do have to ask some questions because—
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. What should people look for when evaluating these small farms? Because let's assume that based on, like if we're trying to summarize the conversation, because all these are different rabbit holes, they could all go down. And like, you've obviously been super deep into this. I've explored them myself to varying extent, but then I gotta get to a point where I feel like I understand enough about this. So I just don't need to be eating any of the stuff from the supermarket as much as possible. And I currently do source from a few farms myself and I have a lot of them just ship in, but I do find myself like for convenience, just wanting to grab a steak sometimes at HEB or whatever. And I try to find like the local stuff, but what is the kind of gold standard? Is it like we just have to find farms that are doing the each thing the right way, whether it's chicken, whether it's pork, whether it's beef, and then just basically committing to like supporting them because we can kind of know that they're doing it the right way, like moving forward? Like, is that kind of the best we can do? I mean, aside from raising our own food, right? Which most people aren't going to do.
Yeah, that's true. The gold standard, it varies from product to product. For beef, it would be if they're USDA organic certified. It's like a circular symbol.
Yeah.
Plus AGA certified.
What is AGA? Is that the
American Grass-Fed Association?
Okay. Certified. Got it. Yeah.
Both of those, leafycreekfarm.com is in Texas, right outside of the San Antonio area. They're the place where I actually order a decent amount of my beef from. So they're USDA organic certified plus AGA certified. I mean, they're getting audited so much in that case, you know, there's the system in that case. So it would cost more to cheat that system than it would just to be produced it the right way.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, it's not realistic, but what I did was I actually volunteered at fivebarbeef.com for over a year and a half. So he sells wild cattle.
Okay. Like, wait a second. How do you spell that?
Five bar beef.
Is it like the number five or spelled out?
Yeah. The number five. fivebarbeef.com. He doesn't use any vaccines, doesn't use any medicines, doesn't even clip his bulls. So you get like higher testosterone content.
And he lets them just roam in the wild, basically, kind of like.
Yes.
How does he?
We did rotate them on a fresh pasture.
Almost. I see. Yeah, yeah.
But outside of that, they're literally not even touched. And yep. He's basically been raising the same herd for like 30 years.
That's
so
awesome.
What he did to not have to use any vaccines or medicines, and this is a great subject in terms of what's going on today, mm-hmm. was he basically let the cattle do what they were going to do. He didn't touch them from day one. The ones that died out and couldn't survive in that environment, they just died out. The ones that survived, they had kids that were able to flourish yep. in that environment to do the same exact thing.
Yep.
And now he doesn't have to literally use any medicines, no vaccines.
Yep. As nature intended.
Yeah, they're 100% grass-fed with supplemented with alfalfa maybe last week or so.
Yeah,
before that's awesome. They're processed. Mm-hmm. So if you want like wild domesticated animals, that's like pretty much as close to wild meat outside of like elk and venison and all that other stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
I buy my stuff from him as well. And that's not realistic for most people, obviously, to volunteer, although that would be the best solution because then it's up to you, you know? Are these guys meeting your standards? You're there every other day. You can see what they're doing.
Right.
If you are, then you're happy with it. Some questions to ask in terms of poultry, like if I were to go to a small farmer, I would ask them, well, how many square feet do you have per hen? And you can kind of eyeball this too. You don't really need to ask them. But a good base mark is you want like around 200 square feet per hen.
Hmm.
Usually if they're getting tighter, like 100 to 50 or like that free range is 1.5. Come on. That's like embarrassing, you know? It's like a shoebox basically. If the square footage per hen is getting smaller and smaller, that means each hen has less access to the bugs and worms and all those other minerals, right. The grass, et cetera, in the ground. So that means to support those numbers, they have to bring in a lot of grain.
Yep.
You know? So then the next question would be, what kind of grain are you using? They'll say, oh, non-GMO grain. Okay, well, is it organic? Like, is it USDA organic certified grain, which means non-GMO also? And they'll go like 9 out of 10 times, oh, no, it's not, you know?
Yep.
Or they'll sometimes say like, oh, it's seasonal. So sometimes they do have it, sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. And then that's up to you to decide what you think of that, you know? The other question would be like, oh, you know, how often do you rotate them onto your fresh pasture? Do you even rotate them at all? You ideally want to rotate daily because once again, these animals really deplete the ground extremely quickly.
So they want a lot of space, rotation. Are there some hens that don't eat any grains? Is that a thing? Oh, actually, one thing I do, we have asked, there's some eggs here that we used to get from farmhouse delivery that we could tell the difference between the hens that were eating corn and soy. I think it was even just corn because it was soy free, but they were still eating corn. And Allison and myself could both feel a difference when we found some eggs that I guess it was a different farm. No corn, no soy. I guess they might've done grains, but probably the other grains that just weren't the corn and soy. So that's something that I think people should try to ask too.
Yeah. You know, at the end of the call, I might actually ask where you find that in Texas.
I got to find out again, like, cause we haven't had them in a while and I do miss them. I could notice a difference in my gut cause eggs disrupt me generally and I could eat those eggs and I would like have no problem whatsoever.
No, I'm the same way. Like for some reason, eating poultry that's heavily fed grains, it kind of messes up my stomach.
Yeah. And pork does that to me too. Like if I eat like a pork roast that has too much fat in it, I just feel sick. Something transfers, like maybe with the fat of the omega-6, I don't know, or maybe the grains they were fed, but I think it transfers. And you know, an animal like pork has a lot of fat. So you get a lot of those pesticides or the things they're eating or whatever into that, and then you're consuming it. You know, I just feel like pork really hits me hard too, so.
Yeah, for me, like I volunteered at happy-hens.com. They're like the only place I know that's corn and soy free and USDA organic certified and actually rotates their hens onto fresh pasture like every single day. And the square foot per hen is like 240 there.
So that sounds like the gold standard for chicken.
Yeah, that would be the gold standard, which is you're not going to find at the supermarket. No way.
Right, right.
The best is you'll find like Vital Farms, which is still a good bet. It's still a huge upgrade from the other eggs. But theirs is like, you'll see it on the back of the label. It has 100. This logo that says 100 in big bold letters, that means 100 square foot per space.
Oh.
Yeah.
Does that show up on most egg cartons? I don't know if I've noticed that.
It's fairly rare.
Just for them, I see.
Yeah, Vital Farms has, it's a certification. It's like someone has to certify you for that.
So they have a certification for an amount of space that's actually not ideal, right? That should show you exactly how the food industry is set up.
Well, I mean, compared to 1.5 square foot, you know, it's like.
Right. Yeah. You know. So they're comparing it to like the mass producer trying to appeal that market. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so are there any kind of final like tips, tricks, whatever? Because I think we got a good idea for people. Like I've been telling people for a while, find some farms that you know, like, and trust. And, you know, if you want to get to know the farmers, that's great. Or you just ask a few questions and just kind of trust that they're going to do it from here on out, right? And then support them. And as long as the quality is consistent and you don't have any adverse reactions or whatever, I, for the most part, buy from the same places. It sounds like that you do that as well. And in the sea of fraud that's out there, it was a lot of it is actual fraud and some of it is just mislabeling or whatever. It's like, you kind of want to keep it simple with this stuff and think of the grocery store as like an emergency situation almost. Yeah. Like if you have no food or whatever, like go to the grocery store, right? But are there any final tips of about how people can think about this or maybe they questions asked or things to do?
Yeah, there. So honestly, I hate to make this one quick because it is important. A lot of people will bring up the fact it's just too expensive. That's why.
Okay. Let's just unpack that real quick.
And I shop, that's why I buy the cheap stuff. So from my research, we can talk small scale, large scale, basically in short, a factory farmed 2000 calorie diet, a day diet is basically $7.77.
Okay, wait, you know, a day is what you're saying?
Yeah,
okay, go ahead.
Yep. 77 cents. And then USDA organic certified diet, 2000 calories, matched for the same micronutrients or macronutrients, whatever, $12.12 a day. So it's a $5 difference, but that $5 difference basically comes from all these subsidies that are going on. The industrial agricultural system is heavily subsidized because grain is subsidized. Plus, if the farmer goes out of business, who pays off that loan? The taxpayer pays off that loan. Yep. The taxpayer is paying that as well. So they're actually, it's kind of they're prepaying for meat. You're going to the grocery store, you're seeing ground beef, a dollar, or a pound of ground beef for like $4 because you prepaid $2 to $3. You're really paying $7. So it doesn't look like you're paying, but you're paying.
And what about health? What about the health consequences of standard American diet and the lost work, the lost productivity, the healthcare costs? Like, I mean, it's unbelievable. Real food this way. And I think direct from farmer and you save time. It's simple. You can stay consistent with it. Like the amount of time people spend in grocery stores is actually kind of ridiculous. Like you go there, it's like an hour affair minimum, you know? Yeah. Like it's like if you factor in all those things and then you feel better and that has downstream effects to like your life and like getting a promotion and just getting like, there's so many examples to which it's not even close of a comparison. Like I actually think that you would lose way more money in the standard American diet on just a dollar per dollar basis. It might take like 5 years for that to like etch out or whatever, but I don't believe that cheap food is saving anybody any money if you actually factor in everything.
Well, the average American is spending, according to Paul Check, like $5,000 to $7,000 a year on medical expenses. Right? So if you factor that in, dude, it's like
I know it's insane.
Plus, the average American is spending $7,000 to $14,000 a year on non-essential expenses, which include alcohol, cell phone,
right,
that they definitely don't need, Netflix subscriptions. Yep. Other random BS that's really not adding literally any value to your life. Once you factor all that in, I mean, it's like, dude, a no-brainer what decision you should be making, you know?
I couldn't agree more.
There's a tremendous amount just in that topic
alone. Obviously, that's a big topic. You know, maybe we can do a follow-up show just on the expensive food and all that. But I appreciate you coming on. And obviously, like, there's a lot of different rabbit holes here. Where could people, do you have like a hub of where you're documenting this? Or is this just more something you're just trying to get awareness out?
I have the book, you know, the Anti-Factory Farm Shopping Guide book that has a huge.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. So we'll have a link to that. So it's the Anti-Factory Farm Shopping
Guide.
Oh, well, that's awesome. So that sounds like an easy reference. Reference everyone talked about. So there'll be links to that below. And are you on social media or anything like that where people can follow along or?
Yeah, they can just Google my name and find a bunch of Instagram and Facebook and YouTube and all that other stuff.
Okay, awesome. Great. Okay, well, this is obviously, you know, for time's sake, there's a lot of different things to explore here, but I think if we were to sum it up, you know, really get to know your farmer, which is kind of something people hear, but I mean, do it though, like actually do it. And it's amazing. You could even with some of these farms set up auto ship on a monthly basis. I don't even have to check out for this one farm I buy from. They just send me, it's like $150 and they send me like a mix. Like it's like a couple ribeyes. It's like this, it's like that. And I just, it shows up and I eat it and it's awesome. And it's like, I don't have to buy that or think about it or do anything. So I just think we need to do that more. And we really do need to support the small farmers that are doing the right way. Like use market forces to change the food system because the food system is not going to change until there are actual dollars at play to do it, you know? So thanks for coming on the show, Eugene. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Wow. Please always remember that the members of the Ancestral Mind podcast are not, in fact, medical professionals. They're not doctors. They're not nutritionists. They are simply providing this entertainment for you to do your own research and to entertain yourselves. So please consult a physician before changing your diet. Not everything works for everybody. And make sure you always do your own research on everything you hear on this show and outside.